أهلاً وسهلاً، بنفنوتي، فالتش، تيتامبيري. Welcome to the podcast series of the UNESCO Chair in Refugee Integration through Languages and the Arts at the University of Glasgow. We bring you sounds about integration, languages, culture, society and identity.
Hello everyone, lovely listeners, and welcome to this second episode in our two-part series where I'm interviewing Adam Williamson and Sausan Abdelghany on the MPhil theses that they completed last year. My name is Dr. Dan Fisher. I'm a researcher with the UNESCO RILA team. And today's podcast episode will be Sausan being interviewed by Adam and myself. And Sausan's thesis was on the subject of ESOL, which is English for speakers of other languages, and how this is important in the context of refugee integration in Scotland. So Sausan, welcome, and thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Hello, Dan and Adam and listeners. Thanks for having me today.
So let's kick us off, Sausan. Can you explain, perhaps for first-time listeners of the series, why is ESOL so important in the context of refugee integration in the UK?
So first of all, ESOL is meaning English for speakers of other languages. So when arriving to the UK, this is English speaking country, so you have to learn English. So it's very important for anyone coming to the country to speak the language, to learn. And especially for refugees, they weren't prepared that they are traveling next month or next year or in the next few years. So they find themselves in a situation they have to speak different language. So English language is like the one key for all the doors, that open all the doors. If they need to go like from their first arrival, they have to deal with the officer. They want to tell them, I'm seeking asylum. So it's very important for asylum seekers and refugees to learn English.
Mm-hmm. So the introduction to your thesis, it doesn't start in a classroom. Instead, it situates us somewhere else. Can you tell us a bit about where you situate the thesis in the start and why that's so important to the story?
Yes, of course. Because when I apply for this opportunity to research ESOL, it was like kind of something interests me. And it was I lived this situation, so I lived the whole experience. And then when I studied my master's in TESOL, teaching English to speakers of other languages, in 2018, I feel it's not only something happened to me, it's only something I want to study more in more depth. So my introduction started in Heathrow Airport when we first came, me and my husband and my less than 1 year old daughter. When we come and we find ourselves, we want to speak to the officer. I was teaching English in my country. I'm from Egypt, so I was teaching English. But I feel like all the English I was teaching, it was like grammar rules and vocabulary, but I wasn't in the situation that I speak a whole conversation in English. So I was so scared, this is the right word, because I couldn't express myself, I couldn't tell them. And even we tried to write something on the paper that we were seeking refugee, but instead I say we're seeking revenge, because this is the word that came to my mind.
Oh no.
Peter, yeah, it was in our wedding book I showed to you, Adam, when you came, remember? So it was very funny, yeah, that you come to the country and you say, yes, I know English, yeah, it will be very easy to me. But when you're in the middle of the situation, I feel I forget all the English and I was very confused. So it's really very, very, very difficult situation for someone can't even speak any word of English. So that's why I feel everyone should have language is very important, not only for integration, but also for communicating with people.
Mm-hmm.
I was drawing on my own experience. That's why I started with my story.
Yeah. And so am I right in saying that that language is in Scotland considered to be a key facilitator of integration?
Yes, of course. Yeah. also to explain to my listeners what does it mean, integration. Integration is to communicate with the outside world, to be part of the community that you live in. So if I say I'm integrated in Scotland or in Edinburgh, how is this? If I say if I see my neighbor in the morning, I say hello, good morning, how are you doing? So this is I'm communicating, I'm building social connection. If I want to go to the GP, when I enter, I should speak to them. I have some sore in my throat, in my eye, in anything. So the first step to integration is by learning the language, is by speaking English.
And can you tell listeners, Sausan, a little bit about the context of ESOL in Scotland and how it works for refugees?
Yes, so in Scotland, we have the new Scots strategy that was in 2014, which include having integration from day one, which means asylum seekers and refugees have access to ESOL classes from the first day they arrive to Scotland, which is allow many people that they can start. Once they arrive, they can start learning English, they can join a class, they can apply. I'll discuss what is like some barriers for this later, but at least we have this option. They have this access to learn from the first day they arrive.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And also it's organized differently between local authorities. So if I'm speaking about Scotland, it's every local authority, it has their own system. So it's not like national program and it's applied for every place in Scotland. No, during my observation, I've noticed that every local authority has their system or like a way of following ESOL and teaching ESOL between different areas in Scotland.
Yeah, that's right. And I remember while we were working on this, we were talking a lot about the differences between ESOL classes delivered by colleges and those delivered by local authorities. Can you explain this a little?
Yes, sure. So if you want to study English in Scotland, you have two options or maybe more. The first thing is either to apply for the college. This is like the formal way. You can apply for the college, apply online or go to the college to fill a form. And then you will be added to the waiting list. And once they have the space, they will contact you for assessment to decide your level. And it's like classrooms and you have to go in certain times. Learners, they choose if they want to be full-time mode or part-time. And also there is local authority, which they learn less formal. Maybe they go to community center or they go some other classes. Maybe it's not in a classroom environment or not that formal, or they shouldn't wait for a long time. They can start immediately. So it's more accessible than studying in the college, because sometimes also the college you have to start to the beginning of the term and they have exams at the end. But if you study in a local authority, it will be more relaxed. You study in a community center, sometimes you study gardening, for example, sometimes you study cooking. So you can do any activity, and through this activity you learn English.
Yeah, and we'll get on to learning English through different activities bit later. Spoiler alert for people listening. But one of the main contributions of your thesis is that it gives us an insider view into how many refugees in Scotland experience ESOL classes. And one of the arguments of the thesis is that refugee learners often have very specific needs that are maybe different from other adult learners who are learning English. Can you tell us about what some of these specific needs are?
Of course, if you have migrants from any background and refugee, what is the difference? Like I said at the beginning, refugee wasn't prepared to come. So they maybe they were in a situation, it happened suddenly. So I think this is the first difference. And also between refugees themselves, you will find some differences. So if you speak about maybe age, you will find different age. You speak about their background in education. Some people, they already have education in formal way. Some people, they never have education. You speak about the circumstances that bring them to the country. Some people, they came in a flight with a visa, maybe tourist visa, and they apply in the airport for asylum. But some others, they had very difficult life and they came by boat, so they see horror in their journey to the UK. They came maybe in by any means. So they have become, I can't treat this learner with a learner who come maybe to study or apply for a master and he just want to improve his English. So of course there are so many different cases that you can deal with each case differently.
Sousan, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about the whole context of the asylum system and how that impacts on people's learning, because I imagine when people arrive, they might feel very isolated if their English language skills don't allow them to participate fully in life. And the asylum system, as we know, can be quite a hostile place for people, can be quite a traumatic thing for people to go through. So I wonder what impact that has on people's learning. And from your point of view, do you see ESOL classes as a potential way for people to access the emotional support that they might need to be able to start to live a better or more normal life once they arrive?
Yeah, this is very, very important point, Adam, that the asylum process itself. So that's like very big difference between asylum seekers and refugees and other learners, because yes, they go through this process, which not easy, which affecting their learning in a big way, because applying for an asylum means you don't have any choice. You don't have any choice or control over where you live. So the process starts if they apply in the airport. They say, we're coming here, we have maybe some dangerous in our country, so we can't stay in our country, so we need to live in this country. So the first thing, after going through a very difficult day and a lot of questions and maybe 7 hours of checking that you are a real person and your story is real and you can't go back to your country. So after this very stressful day, you move to a hotel. So once you move to a hotel or a bed and breakfast or any hostel, this is where they locate you. And for example, you're a very energetic person and you try to apply to learn English from day one. Maybe after a week or so, they say, okay, we need the place, so you can move to another hostel till we find you another place. Or you can go to a temporary accommodation if you're lucky as well, and they move you from the hotel very quickly. Maybe it's in the same country, maybe it's outside, maybe it's on the borders. So you can say, oh, sorry, I registered in a class here, so I want to be moved or located around this class. No, you don't have any choice, you don't have any agency of where to stay. And also the asylum process, it has like some restrictions. You're not allowed to work for the first 12 months when you stay in the UK. That also affects the learning, because if you're working or if you're going outside, you're dealing in more English environment, you will pick up some words, you will get in some. But even that option is not existing. So you have very limited options. You can only stay in the hotel and go with the process, the asylum, contact your lawyer, trying to find someone to translate to you or interpreter with the solicitor office. So it's painful.
It sounds as if it maybe takes quite a while for people to find any level of stability that might allow them to really start to engage with learning the language. Yeah.
So as I said, I was having good English, so I was translating all the letters very well and communicating and in the phone call, yeah, I can. And it takes me 1 year to start thinking about, okay, I need to go to attend any English class to learn more, for my husband to find a work or to be allowed to work. Because even if he asks any place to work, they say, no, you're not work permitted. So that, you know, make us more disappointed and not going out to the outside world. So imagine if someone can't speak any English or can't even communicate, it will be very, very hard to them to even think of any other thing.
And I think in your work, you also referred to some interviews that you had with people who were saying that they you know, while the asylum process is ongoing, it's very hard to focus on anything other than the asylum process. To really sit down and study is a very, very difficult challenge.
Yes. Yeah, especially they have so much memories. I noticed while my interviews with young men, maybe they are 16 or over, they have nostalgia. They always think of their family. They have a lot of things in their mind that prevent them from focusing on learning a new language. So in some situations, it's like luxury thing for them. I know it's very important, but according to their mental health or readiness to learn anything in the world, they're thinking more about they left everything suddenly, they left their families, they wanted to be with their brothers or sisters. So that's also very difficult for them.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to bear the mental health in mind of people who are attending these ESOL classes. And so when you spoke to ESOL teachers as part of your research, did you get the sense that they had received training or that they were prepared to teach people who have experienced trauma?
So yeah, they don't have a national system they follow. So it's again, differ between each place. So in some places they say, yes, we got some training to deal with traumatic students. And in other places, no, they didn't have any idea. They say, we're trying, yeah, to be avoiding any sensitive topics, like when we ask about their home country, we're trying to avoid, but they didn't study something as part of their training. No, they were trained to be teachers, ESOL teacher or language teachers, but they didn't train to how to deal with refugees in a specific. So they learn, they deal in a class of maybe 10 or more students, or more in some cases, 15. And it shouldn't be like all of them asylum seekers or refugees. It's mixed. Some Spain, some French, some German, a lot of students from different countries, and between them asylum seekers and refugees. So in most cases, it depends on the teacher. If one of the ESOL teachers, she said, I had some training on domestic violence, so I used my background from this topic in dealing with refugees. But for others, if someone, he never go through this topic or having any training about how to deal with traumatized person, they deal as a teacher and trying only to avoid any clashes between or to remind them of any bad memories.
Yeah, I just want to jump in. I'm just thinking that in these classrooms, obviously, there must be people from many different backgrounds who speak lots of different languages. And I'm just wondering, from your point of view, if that's something that's presents more challenges or more opportunities. Do you think that's something that's potentially beneficial, yes, maybe in that kind of situation? Or do you think it presents further difficulties in terms of different cultural taboos or different tensions that might arise?
During my observation, because I attended like so many ESOL classes in different places, I can say just what I observed, that it depends on the teacher. Some teachers, this is what they learn, that learners learn by immersion. If I speak English all the time and learners speak English all the time, and I prevent any side talks between learners, they will learn quickly because they are forced to speak only English. Mm-hmm. Some other teachers, they take their first language to encourage them to learn English, and also to like exchange language among them. One class, it was in a community center. The teacher was so nice, and he teach them about food, and he teach them the name of the vegetables and everything. So he used the kitchen of this community center to make food. So everyone was cutting, and while they are learning, they were making a dish. And I was very lucky to have a meal with them on my own.
It's always good.
Yeah, it was my best observation. So I feel the teacher, he was very smart in employing all their languages. So if he say maybe this is a plate in English, he tried to, on the table, he say, can we all exchange what is plate in French, what is plate in Arabic? So everyone was very happy to share what is this called in their own language. And they were trying to pronounce the word, and maybe if someone pronounced wrong, we laugh and we try to teach them again the word. And I say, yeah, this is plate, means tabak, for example, in Arabic. And they try to say tabak. And we all love that we pronounce differently. And it was very fun. So we learn the word in English. And it stick in the learner's mind. We learn how to say the word in different languages. Of course, we won't remember like 5-6 languages. But I feel, yeah, someone listened to the word from me. And someone commented on that word. And we love. So he make a very nice environment of using the first language. And then, yeah, after they eat and they have fun. So I feel that was... If I want to say the successful class, yeah, I can say about this class because he employed the first language, he added fun things.
It sounds to me as if maybe incorporating other people's first languages, gave them license to make mistakes, or they lost a bit of the nervousness or the shame or whatever you might call it.
The learner the impression you're not maybe ignored because you can't speak English. No, I'm the teacher and I don't know how you say this word in your language. So we're learning from each other, not I'm the teacher, I have the knowledge. So it's kind of trying to balance the power as well. So I'm not the most powerful and I'm teaching you because you are maybe low level or you don't know anything. No. I don't know how you say this in your language. And you also learn from me how to say this in my language. So, yes, creating this connection between the learners, it was very good.
Thank you, Sasan. And can you explain, and I think you've already explained it a bit, about how kind of adding languages in the classroom assists with giving people back some agency or letting them feel as though they have more agency over their learning. Can you explain why this is important in this context of learning English?
Yeah, when you give the learners choice, or when you give them the ability that I want to learn by this way or I want to include my own language, it makes balance between the power. So I'm not only receiving what the teacher say. Especially it depends on the learners. Some learners, they have a background of formal education before. Some others, due to like war or unsettled situation in their country, they are not used to be sitting in a classroom, having very formal way of learning. They just want to learn from doing something. So I, from my observation, most of the classes I observed in the community center, it was like maybe attending crochet or doing some handicrafts, especially for women or old age or some people, they didn't have formal education. So they like to do something fun. And through this, they learn the English by knowing the names of the things, they employ their languages. So the learners at this point feel I have control. I'm learning English and I'm also share with others some of the words I know or some of my cultures. So in these classes as well, the good point about is they have Scottish people and they have learners. So when they advert the class, they say, come to learn English. No, they say, come to socialize. And I don't think you will find something in the formal way of education in the college or anything. You will find this in a community center because this is something for the community. So all the people in the community, they will go and they will exchange things. So sometimes everyone brings something from their country, a dish, or today maybe we have the National Day of something. One of the ladies, she had good news and she bring very nice cake from their country. So this kind of classes, they make them, we're not only listeners or taking the English in a formal way. No, we have control over what we want to learn, what are the skills we want to acquire from this place. And while they do this, they pick up some English words.
I think one of the main lessons from the learnings from your work is exactly that, is to think of how a language can be learned in more interesting ways. And I think you had a fun story about, I think it was a group of learners outdoors. I think you're on a boat. And I think you had the opportunity to observe them both in the classroom and on their excursion. And can you tell us a bit about the differences you observed?
Yes. That class as well, the teacher was very open-minded, and she had like this hybrid mode of education. Some days she was very formal, maybe in the class and teaching them from the book, and the other days she make a trip for them. So my observation in the two situations, same learners from the first class, maybe they were embarrassed to make mistakes, they didn't want to participate a lot. The more higher level or the confident learners, they were, you know, taking the microphone all the time and try to participate. But when we were on that boat, they had a coffee and cakes on the boat, and she bring them like paper of all the free places in Edinburgh that you can go and take your kids without like spending so much money. And they started, yeah, but without showing them the paper, she say, each one can tell me a place. So each one say, yes, we go to the museum, and it was free of charge, you can take your kids. And they try even with some broken English to explain how was their day in the museum, what the kids do. And they were trying to find the word, and the teacher helped them if maybe they stuck. And say, yes, you saw some maybe animals, you saw some, oh yes, the clock was ringing. So she gave them some English while they trying to speaking about their experience. And I find all of them were happy, laughing, participating, not like when you ask some questions and I have to answer, so someone will criticize my accent, someone will see if I'm say grammatical correct or not. No, they were just speaking without any fear from anything or doing mistake. They were just telling each other information.
And I think that last bit is, again, really important, is here it was finding a way for people to want to communicate with each other and finding a topic which they could want to help each other with is something that really helped them, it sounds like, break out of their shells.
Yes, of course.
One thing that was interesting was you attended some classes that were kind of designed to give people a specific skill alongside English. So you attended IT classes that were delivered as ESOL classes, and I think you attended some employment specific classes. Tell us a bit about those and how, you know, do you think they were beneficial for the learners?
Yeah, so this is one part of teaching English, is to teaching through other subjects. So some people, they say, what is the importance of maybe learning English? My kids can do anything for me when I go to the supermarket or anything. But some of them, they want, for example, to learn how to shop online, how to buy something from Amazon. So opening new opportunities for learners can make them learn by other ways. So the class I observed, it was, yes, IT classes, and the teacher was telling them very basic things about how to open Word, how to shop online, how to book a flight online, all these things that they can do without asking for help or waiting maybe for kids to go back from the school or anything. It was allowing them to learn new skills, and also they were learning English because the Word program, for example, has like file and all the words that in app, you know, so they can learn these words and learn how to process this, to order something, to buy, to pay. So, for example, if he teaches them how to pay, so they know that pay means that they spend money, how to enter their bank details, how to choose the day. So it was very interesting for the learners as well. They were all participating and they learning new skills while they learn. For the employability course, they learn how to be builders or getting some certificates to be handymen.
Yeah, I think it was a health and safety course.
But they gain at the end another certificate to work as handymen or builders.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what was the school, this certificate.
Yes, we're recording this quite a long time after you wrote the thesis. And just before we get on to the main takeaway points, there are some challenges, again, for asylum seekers in particular that we haven't quite touched on yet, and they include travel and childcare. I was wondering if you could expand on those and help listeners understand why these are extra barriers for asylum seekers in particular, but also refugees.
Yes, this is something also different between local authorities, but this is a very big issue for some asylum seekers and refugees that I interviewed. They say they wanted to attend and they got acceptance in the college or in the community center, but their problem that they have young children not in the school age, which they don't have like any child care opportunities for them, so they can leave them with someone or relative or anyone and they can go to learn. In some local authorities, they provide the child care and it's very near or maybe in the same building, so they can having these hours of their learning and the kids, they are happy. Some also local authorities, they provide travel costs. So if you take the bus, you can show them the ticket and you can take this money back, or even they provide like bus tickets for them. But in other places, no, they don't provide child care. So this is a very big problem. In some informal education, like the community centers, I attend one class which they were having some babies on their labs. They were all understanding that they coming to learn, so they were welcoming them, and all of them, maybe not only the mom can take care of the child, no, everyone take turn to hold that child. If he cry, she go sometimes for a walk with him and come back. So the teacher was allowing that, and all the learners were helping the mom. They know that she need to socialize and has this time while she's having a kids. So it depends. But for the college, for example, no, they never allow this thing to happen. And it's difficult in some cases, yeah, to have this child care available for them or even help with transport. So that also can be a reason for learners not to attend any classes or to stay at home or not to learn. Yeah, I've noticed that men, they sometimes they don't have responsibility or the children with their wives and they can go to learn. It's not a problem. But for some women, yes, it's clear that why they can't go out. Mm-hmm. So that could be from like the solution that to provide more child care, more help with the travel cost, because at the beginning they don't have any money and the asylum system, they give like £5 per day for person, I think.
I mean, it keeps changing also depending on whether or not you're in hotel accommodation, but it's very, very like small amount of money. Small
amount of money. So if you take the bus with £5, so either you take the bus or you eat. So they are in a difficult situation. So this is one of the things that help refugees, that to provide them. So, okay, just come and learn and we will take care of any other things that prevent you to.
Yeah, but thank you. Like Adam, a lot of your work was taking place as we were coming out of lockdown. But so a lot of people you'd spoken to had attended online classes, or a lot of ESOL classes are still taking place online. For the people that you've spoken to, did you feel that that was working? Did you feel that they were looking forward to going back to in-person classes? Is sort of online learning something that is particularly beneficial for refugees and asylum seekers going forward?
Yes, I feel like the answer of this, I don't have like one answer because it depends on the circumstances of every learners. Some advanced level, they were very happy with learning online. They say it save much time. I can like open the class because some colleges, it's like 1 hour away from your home. So they were very happy to learn online. They pick up quickly. They do their homework. They send it to the teacher to correct. So I didn't find any problem with them and they didn't complain from learning online. On the opposite, they say it saves time and it saves money of the cost of the travel and everything. Some other learners, especially if they were beginners or having some younger kids, they say it's very difficult to learn online because when I'm out, so I am away from the kids. But at home, they are on my lab, or I have to maybe switch off the camera and microphone and do something, so I lose some of my class. Also, if they are starting to learn or beginner levels, it's difficult to pick up online, some problems with internet connection. So it wasn't like a good solution for them to learn.
Thank you. I think that's a pretty clear answer. And so, yeah, so I asked the same to Adam, but if you could, to round us off, maybe, if you were to distill your year's worth of work into three takeaway messages that people can take with them, what would those be?
The first thing is asylum seekers and refugees learners, they have like, I can't say special needs, but they are needing more care for what they see or what their background or the sudden situation that they find themselves on. So for treating, when I'm speaking about teaching a language, I can't put all the learners in one situation, or I deal with them in like they are all learners. No, I should give special care if I am dealing with asylum seeker or refugees. I should be careful with considering their circumstances. So I feel it's a good way always to have with the teacher, even maybe a one person in each community center or any college, like some extra mental health for them, someone to speak with them, someone to know more about their background, because knowing about these details can help them to learn. Sometimes changing the teacher can affect them. So if I know that person, maybe he wants to stick with one teacher, that will be very helpful for them. Someone new, he wants to deal with more persons. So this is my first message, that we should consider or tailor something for asylum seekers and refugees. Second thing is increasing or trying to add more effort to make the ESOL available for everyone. Try to facilitate learning, try to encourage innovative ideas. So I feel, for example, the students that they come to study in the UK, they have some time. If we make like initiative, if you learn Chinese, for example, and I can teach you English, so you will find so many volunteers. So it shouldn't even cost a lot of money from the government or needs a special venue. They can make in a cafe, or we can encourage some clubs to exchange languages. So the people will learn English while I'm teaching them my own language. Yes, I feel like these ideas would help.
Mm-hmm. And so that was two, and maybe the third?
The third one, like increasing agency, because this is the point that refugee lack, that they don't have control over anything they do. So at least if they want to choose something, they choose what to learn, and they have control over their learning. They have more choice to include maybe their language. So I feel, this is the most important point, that to allow learners to be more having choice, yes, of what they learn and what type of learning, mix between types if they want, allowing them to discover, giving them more activities, increase, for example, like the extra activities, the outdoor fun. So it needs, like I said, some innovative ideas or creative,
Yeah, I think bringing it back to what you were saying before, there is agency in terms of having people have some say in how they learn, but there's also finding ways of giving people agency through learning. So as you're saying about the classes, that gives people agency as they learn, or finding ways to get new learners to come out of their shell is sort of what we were discussing before.
Yes, you're right.
Brilliant. Sao-san, thank you so much for telling us all about the work that you're doing this time last year. Actually, yeah, if I think about it, this time last year, you were in the middle of your field work and we had lots of discussions about how to best approach this topic. And I think you've really come on so far and to speak so eloquently about what is, I think, quite a complicated topic in Scotland. So thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. And thank you, Adam, for adding your thoughts and questions into the mix as well.
Thanks to you. It's been very interesting.
Thanks.
Shukran, grazie, tapaliv, totenda. Thank you for listening to this episode. For the full show notes and for more information about our work, please visit bit.ly/UNESCO_Raila.